his wife Dorothea. She still has quite a few of his paintings, not a lot, but still some of them, and she has a number of them that she won't sell, and she says she's eventually going to destroy, because she apparently was as much of a critic of his work, that she knew what was good and what was where he missed a little bit, and she just didn't want to have any of the things that she thought he wasn't up to the best. And we looked at a couple of them that we thought were delightful, and she says, no, there's something wrong.
That's too bad. You know, to destroy everything.
I can't sell anything. I had to go get it back.
And the only thing you can sell if they haven't seen it. And
so I painted. I have two or three they haven't seen.
Do you have to hide now to do your painting?
I started painting these blockheads and they hadn't seen them. So somebody already bought all my blockheads now.
Most of them. But he hasn't big enough house.
I was telling Everett, we have a painting of theirs, and it's a chicken coop.
I can't imagine it.
Yeah, I meant to bring it, too, to show you. But,
yeah, I'd like to see it.
He doesn't remember whatever happened to somebody.
Yeah, did you mention Leon Bonnet?
Yeah, I was going to ask you what your recollections on Leon Bonnet.
Well, you know, he came to San Diego from Tuxedo Park, New York. I was told that, anyway. And he and his wife settled in a beautiful country place in Bonita Valley, mm-hmm. where my wife and I visited them several times. Mr. Bonnet impressed me as being very conservative, social prominent, and wealthy. He was definitely an Easterner in his manner. Yeah. He was of average size and possessed a dignified personality. To me, he stood apart from all the other painters in the group because of being rich. I always felt flattered that he would associate with us poor folk. But he was a kind man, although seeming to lack a sense of humor. I never heard him say anything that was funny or ever to laugh. He and his gracious wife had one son for whom they established a boys' school on their own property in Bonita Valley.
I think it was a school for boys.
No, it wasn't, just boys. They might have later taken in girls, but when they started, it was just for their son. Mr. Bonnet specialized in painting the ocean, both when he was living in the East and after he came West. He painted seascapes with the aim of showing precisely how the ocean looked and felt. But some of the big white waves he painted looked more like white feathers to me. However, I have seen some of his ocean paintings that were very convincing in their realism. One day the newspapers carried a story that the Maharaja of Jaipur and his wife, the Maharani, were coming to visit San Diego. Mr. and Mrs. Bonnet happened to go to the Mexican resort of Agua Caliente on the day the royal couple was to be there, to be here or there. And they were mistaken for the royal couple. As they approached the resort entrance, a red carpet was spread out for them, and everything thereafter was on the house. The Bonnets could not understand why they were receiving such attention and being photographed at their table. The next day, the San Diego Union showed on the front page a large picture of the Bonnets with the caption, "The Maharaja and the Maharani of Jaipur." I believe the fact that Mrs. Bonnet wore a gold snake encircling her neck was the reason they were mistaken for the royal Indian couple. That's a true story. I'll never forget one Sunday morning, we opened up the page, and there was Leon Bonnet and his wife sitting there, and the Maharaja and the Maharani in Jaipur.
They were amazed.
Yeah, that's right.
They didn't know what had happened, and they were the story that they
said. So they were just going wild?
Oh, they wouldn't even let them pay for anything.
There's some old stories, too, about the social artists.
That's what that's about all I can say about.
How about Elliot Torrey? He also was painted a lot of seascapes, didn't he?
Yes, he did. Well, not exactly seascapes. He usually would make figure compositions at the seashore, maybe out when the tide was out and that sort of thing. But I know he may have. He probably did make seascapes, but I don't remember.
Well, the only one we have of him painting by him is a seascape, and I know that the San Diego Museum of Art now has a couple of them with children by the sea.
Children.
Yeah.
Yes, here's what I said about him. As for Elliot Torrey, I knew him only slightly. I only saw him on rare occasions when the group would hold a meeting. Mr. Torrey impressed me as being somewhat of a recluse, although a dignified one. He was a tall, slender man, aristocratic and aloof. I felt quite certain that he had no interest in enlarging his circle of friends. But I should add that he was not at all a snob. He once introduced me to his brother who was visiting here from the East. He told me that his brother was a university professor, and my vague memory tells me that his brother was a scientist in the field of botany. I was told that the famous Torrey Pines were named either after this brother or some other member of the Torrey family.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever hear that?
It seems to me I have that he was some way related to the...
Elliot Torrey loved to paint children, portraits of individuals, also figure compositions involving the seashore.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any thoughts on Otto Schneider?
Yes. I surely do. I knew him very well, too.
Both him and Riefel at one time painted in Buffalo and came from Buffalo.
Is that so?
Yeah, because both of them did quite a bit of painting in Buffalo and apparently lived there and then moved on out here.
Otto Schneider was another artist full of enthusiasm. I liked him very much because of his friendly personality and his great excitement over visual nature. He really was pepped up when he looked out at what he's going to paint.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, I had known Mr. Schneider several years before the organization was formed. When I came to San Diego directly from the Art Institute in Chicago, I remained in San Diego a short time and fortunately joined Mr. Snyder's outdoor painting class. I was in his class.
Oh, is that right?
That was just before I went to Mexico. I learned much from him during that short time, and I was happy to know him again several years later when I returned to San Diego from Mexico. Mr. Snyder never taught me any theories about painting. What he gave his students was his own enthusiasm, and that was enough to get them started. It was while studying with him that I made the important discovery of how to see, quote, aesthetically. Until I met Mr. Snyder, I saw things only in a practical way. All I did was recognize objects. I believe it was his enthusiasm which caused me to start seeing the world around me as a living organization of colored shapes and lines, not as recognized, but as felt. He had a way of giving his students self-confidence, and his influence proved very helpful to me when I became an art teacher myself. Otto Schneider had a spirit very similar to that of Riefel. That's mm-hmm. what you were saying, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But unlike Riefel, he reminded me of the Pied Piper. He was the purest impressionist of the group, being totally committed to catching effects of light in his painting. He pointed out to me that the effect of light was constantly changing and very rapidly changing, and that in order to paint it, you had to paint very fast.
Yeah.
He really was interested in the light on things.
Yeah.
And he thought he had to catch it right now, because 1 minute later it would be something else.
Yeah.
That's what I knew about Otto Snyder.
Well, that's very interesting, because hardly anything that, I've asked, I interviewed another lady that was a student for Schneider's, and except that she mentioned he was a nice man, she really didn't tell me hardly anything more about him.
Yeah. Well, he would paint so fast that I have seen him break his brushes. Rather than painting, break a brush, pick up another one.
Yeah, I think that's what this woman had mentioned, that she didn't like the fact that he would take the paintbrush out of her hand and sort of help do the painting rather than tell her.
Well, after all, he didn't want it to be too bad.
Yeah, I think she's the one that mentioned that she started the thing, and then he says, well, here's what you want to do, and he started doing this and doing that, and he finished the whole painting,
so
and she says, okay, then you sign it.
Actually, I think that if you had visited a class of his painter, picked his students outdoors, and went around and looked at all the paintings, it all looked like his work.
Is that right?
It's very hard for an art teacher not to do that.
Yeah.
I have a friend who used to be in my painting class in San Diego State, and every now and then I see her, and she reminds me how I used to paint her picture. That's Mrs. Crouch.
Oh.
Crouch's wife.
One other thing is, do you have an opinion as to the cause for the demise of the contemporary artists of San Diego?
Well,
like those other groups, like the Taos groups, that just continued on, and apparently something failed with the San Diego.
Well, that's an interesting question. I was about to say that it came to an end because of all the members died, but
no,
that's not true.
It didn't do well.
Yeah.
Now, actually, I think that they were painting and flourishing at a time when the viewpoint toward painting was rapidly changing. The young people, the young painters, were beginning to take an interest in abstraction and in what they call self-expression, if you see. Mm-hmm. And I think that must have had something to do with it. I've often thought that John Dewey had a lot to do with the change in the style of art when he wrote his book Art as Experience.
Yeah.
But in any case, it seems to me that as we had that organization, when we had it, the public was beginning to take on what they had hated so long and what they call modernistic art.
Yeah.
So that might have had something to do with it. But of course, those men were fairly old when I joined the organization. Donald and I were much younger.
Yeah.
There was a man, Bonin was a member of the BOH.
Yeah, but he didn't stay in it.
Yeah. He did not join the group which changed its name to Contemporary Artists.
Yeah, I've told him that.
He changed then. Here's the local artist's first exhibit opens at the San Diego Hotel. Still exists, the hotel does. And it tells about, it was Richard Requa, the architect, revealed it, and Reg Poland did. And this was 1929, first exhibition of him, it was called.
Yeah.
I came here in 1928.
Another thing that may have had something to do with it, with the group kind of disbanding, may have been the Depression. Could have, were they just...
That was 29.
Yeah, 29, 30.
But by 1932,
yes.
33, and
That's
34,
right. I don't much think that did it, because those painters were all poor, on the verge of starvation before the Depression hit.
Yeah, well, one of the things is I read somewhere where Charles Frees said that the happiest time of his painting life was during the Depression, because he could then get the what was equivalent to WPA money, because he was an artist before before the crash, and so they were paying him for his paintings, and he had no more real worries about where his money was going to come from. He'd just paint these paintings, and they would go into, I guess, school buildings and so on, and he would very nicely survive on his art.
Well, that probably is true, but I think that the artists began to lose confidence in what they were doing, because the painting that was really being noticed was so very different.
Yeah.
And these artists were primarily interested in making images of just what they thought they were seeing.
Yeah.
They never dreamed of such a thing as proportion as such, or design, or even of expressing what they felt, although that's what they were doing. But they thought they were painting pictures of the scene as it appeared to them.
Yeah.
And that's true of Braun, it's true of Rifle, but you see the vast difference between those two men.
Yeah.
But I think they were losing confidence in the kind of painting they were doing, and must have been thinking that the young people had to take over.
Yeah, that very well could be, because they were, Rifle and Frees and Mitchell were, actually had come from a different era. You know, painting they were doing, you could see Charles, like Charles Frees's paintings changed through the years. He was making a little movement toward a more modern technique, but they were born in the middle part of the 19th century.
That's right.
And I guess as you
then they went into Impressionism, of course. Well, when I studied art in the Art Institute in Chicago, and I was trained in the Impressionistic style, of course. And when I first came out to San Diego, I studied with Otto Snyder, and that was still the case. But then I went to Mexico for 3 years. And I came in contact with the Mexican painters, and that, without my knowing it, certainly had a vast influence on me.
Yeah.
And I think, actually, when I came back to San Diego and painted that picture called Zapotecas and sent it to San Francisco exhibition, at that time the Mexicans were receiving a lot of notice. Diego Rivera and others. And I suspect that my painting looked Mexican, maybe that's why I won the prize.
They had never heard of him.
Nobody ever heard of me.
They had just arrived and Rifle helped him frame it and insisted that we send it. And I laughed and they said, I'd like $300 for my birthday, which was in April. The show was opening in the spring. Mm. And to my great surprise, he got a wire that he had won first prize. Yeah. They didn't know anything about him.
That was nice.
And I remember Mrs.
Show
Braun
him a picture of that painting.
Braun said once, when we were young, she said, the young ones always win the prizes. As they get older, they don't win the prizes. But we all won them when we were young, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true today, because people are interested in new trends.
Oh, sure.
And,
one other thing is...
Was Zapotecas,
was it? Yeah. This was in St. Louis. This was shown all over the United States. The St. Louis World Democrat
News. What other thing?
Did all of these, of the painters of this group, live here permanently, or were some of them just... only temporary residents, and they would spend a little time here and they really lived somewhere else?
No.
Or were they all Were they all pretty well permanent
residents? As far as I know, they all were actually living here.
Yeah, Martin Peterson asked me to ask this question because he felt that there might have been a couple of them that
he was a member of it here.
For 5 minutes.
Well, I mean, 5 minutes he's listed here and tells about him that he had a studio in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Tells all about it.
I know, but he was not a member of the Contemporary Art of San Diego. He was a member of the Associated Art of San Diego.
When he joined that, he was an out of town, so that's probably why he dropped out. He never was in Los Angeles.
Might have been.
Maybe that's where he got that.
Well, it could be.
Yeah.
Even though they were not members of the Contemporary Artists of San Diego, they were San Diego painters. That is Dan Dickey, Fred Hawks, and Bal Barenciano.
Yeah.
Do you have any comments on them?
I think if they had taken on Ivan Messenger and Dan Dickey and Bal Barenciano, the organization might have kept on living.
Yeah.
I always thought that Ivan Messenger should have been asked to belong to that.
We have one of his paintings. Yeah.
We were saw him the other day. He came over for Everett's 80th birthday. He's over here.
Yeah, he's living in Palm Springs, isn't he?
He's often taking care of his house. He's in
Evelyn. Yeah, sometimes when we go to Mexico.
They aren't too strong now on the steps here. So they don't.
Yeah.
Also, they don't like the Westinghouse system. And so they come to, it's confusing.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have a couple of Dan Dickey's paintings. One of them that he submitted, I guess, to the Chicago Art Institute, and it was exhibited, I think, in one of their exhibits there. And then another one that we have of his was exhibited in the Los Angeles Museum of Art back in I think in the late 30s, 38 mm-hmm. or 39.
Oh, of course, I knew Dan very well. He and I were good friends.
How about...
But actually, I think maybe Dan might have come here toward the end of that organization.
Oh, I think he was here after. It didn't last very long.
Yes. He came here, I think, in 1935. And I think Bal Barenciano came about the same time.
Oh, yes. That's right. Well, she was here.
She taught at Francis Parker's. Didn't our daughter study with her?
Yes, she sure did.
She went to Francis
Bell's Parker. Going strong yet, you know.
Yeah, Bell, they just had an exhibit of her work here about a year ago in the County Administration Building. I went down and looked at it and it... it was really a very nice
she's remarkable
exhibit. Yeah.
A
beautiful exhibit. It was mostly her earlier things, stuff that she had done even in Chicago.
Yes, I've seen this one several times.
As a matter of fact, by the time Dan Dickey and Bal Barenciano were here, I think people were beginning to think that all that old group were out of style.
Yeah, that's too bad.
Well, they didn't change. They had their way of seeing and painting, and apparently they couldn't shift.
Yeah.
But I never did get geared in to the point where
he changes all the time.
One of the things is, though, that it would seem to me that, like Rifle and even Fries and Braun were recognized during their time, but they probably didn't change enough. May have been a little too late for them to change, but then to be all of a sudden completely forgotten is one thing that. I just can't understand because...
Well, you may know that just 2 or 3 years ago, some museum in in the East, maybe the Pennsylvania Academy of Art or something, one of those Eastern museums, bought one of Frieze's paintings from the daughter, I think. One of his earliest paintings.
Oh, is that right?
He was painting in the old, before he became an Impressionist.
Yeah.
So they actually bought one of his paintings from, I think it must have been from his daughter.
Yeah.
If you want to look into that.
Yeah, she's still living in La Mesa. We know her very well.
Oh, do you?
Not his daughter.
Oh,
his
not
granddaughter.
His daughter, pardon me, his granddaughter.
Mm-hmm. His granddaughter is in her mid-50s, I would say.
I think it was Legla Bendel was telling you about that. Did you tell him about Donald Horne?
Well, he hadn't asked me about Donald Horne.
We have some Donald Horns around the studio.
Oh, yes, I meant to ask. I think I must have skipped over it.
I said, since this sculptor was about my age, I came to know him very well. In fact, we became close friends, and I spent many hours in his studio, which was located on an alley just above Washington Street across from Sears Roebuck. Donald was a master both in carving wood and in carving stone, the harder the better. He even carved obsidian, as you may know.
Yeah.
Which is a volcanic glass. He was also an impeccable craftsman and loved to follow the old recipes of Cennino Cennini of the Middle Ages for preparing wood surfaces with gesso, on which he would apply gold leaf for decorating some of his sculptures. He even made his gesso. He made a mixture of rabbit skin glue and slack plaster Paris. And he'd put dozens of coats on a board on his sculpture and sand them down and then burnish them with a dog's tooth, incidentally. And make them. I said here, he taught me much about such things. And as a result, I did paint one or two pictures on such gesso surfaces. But eventually I gave that up, for it seemed to me that too much concentration on craft could keep one's mind off of design. Donald was also a master of human anatomy. He was a true purist, where workmanship and unity of effect were concerned. But he had no use for art that was altogether abstract. He couldn't see it.
Oh, there.
And I feel sure there is much more abstraction in his naturalistic sculpture than one can find in much abstract sculpture today. You know what I mean, of course.
Yeah.
Fortunately, he had a devoted friend as a helper, which made it possible for him to create monumental works. This man's name is Homer Dana. Donald moved from his alley studio to Pacific Beach, where he and Homer built a charming studio home with gardens around it. At that time, no other houses were near them. Today, however, the place is hemmed in by many houses. Homer, now 80, lives on in that studio home with Donald's widow, who is an artist herself. Did you know that?
No.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know.
I talked to him on the phone yesterday.
There was a woman who writes in New York and was doing something on Paul Manship and found some of Donald's letters to Manship, and then she wanted to know if Manship had written Donald, and he did.
Yes, Donald used to correspond with that sculptor.
Manship.
Paul Manship, isn't that right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's a Donald Horne on a stairway, and there's a big wooden carving covering up a window there. And then they used to buy things they liked from different collectors. And
Donald and I used to fool around.
Egyptian.
Donald called me called me once and said, hey, there's a beautiful piece of Egyptian sculpture you can get down in the Maryland Hotel for $25. So I went down and with my little daughter, and I went down, and we had $20. We didn't have $25, so I drove around to the San Diego Union where she was working and sent my little girl up to see her and get $5. And we bought the sculpture. This is an 18th century piece. Sure. I mean 18th dynasty. And this thing here, Donald Hoard carved that base for it.
Erskine Campbell owned a great collection of Oriental and other art, and his wife was a former Mrs. Joe Sefton, and Joe Sefton Sr. founded the San Diego Trust and Savings.
Yeah.
So they collected art, and so they didn't have much of that.